This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Well, the weather report today does call for hot sun and also thunderstorms. Either way, perfect reading weather, which I guess means that any weather is a good excuse for some reading. So today we're going to dive in headlong into summer reading. We want to know what you've tackled lately that you'd recommend to the rest of us, and we're going to discuss some of the books that are coming out in the next few months that have already gotten a lot of hype, like Harper Lee's Go Set a Watchman and Milan Kundera's The Festival of Insignificance. You can share your top reads on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211 and tell us what's got you really jazzed. That number again, 1-800-639-2211. And we're joined today by three booksellers with some strong opinions on what they like and don't like and what's coming out. Scott Stearns owns or co-owns the Book Nook in Ludlow. Scott, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Todd Gross is the manager of Phoenix Books Burlington. Todd, nice to have you here.
Thank you so much.
And Becky Dayton owns the Vermont Bookshop in Middlebury. Hi, Becky. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Jane. Thanks.
All right, so let's start right off with some of your picks for top reads, and they can either be books that are coming out or books that you've already read that are out that you just think people should be reading now. They can already pick them up now. And let's start with some fiction. Todd Gross, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, I picked a book that's coming out in paperback this summer. It's called The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell. And this is a really sprawling novel that ties in all of his previous works together. You might call it a science fiction novel because it does make you suspend some disbelief in some of the things that happen, like people living forever. But really, really well written and really fun characters, and goes from the past through the future. That's my pick.
All right. So again, it's called
The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell.
The Bone Clocks. Okay, great. And Becky, what about you?
And I've selected one to talk about first that's coming out July 28th. It's Paula MacLean's new novel. She wrote The Paris Wife, and this one is called Circling the Sun. And it's a fictionalized account of the life of Beryl Markham, who wrote the memoir Westward the Night. And it's about
a famous pilot, right? She was
yes, one of the first pilots and the first female horse trainer in Africa too. A really interesting story, a wonderful love triangle with Karen Blixen and Dennis Finch Hatton. So it's a great read. And if you've read her memoir or seen the movie Out of Africa, it all fits in.
Fabulous. Oh, that sounds good. Okay, Scott Stearns, what about for you?
The first book I'm going to recommend is a young adult book called Jacoby by William Ritter. It's already out in hardcover. It'll be out in paperback in August. And it's basically a mixture of Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes. It's set in a fictional, fantastic New England in 1892, and it's about this strange investigator named R.F. Jacoby and his assistant, Abigail. And she's sort of a great, plucky narrator for the storyline that goes along, and it's sort of a tracking this weird serial killer in the area, but it's also about the characters themselves. In terms of Abigail, she's run away from home to a certain degree, and Jacoby's just trying to figure out how to keep going with his crazy life. So I think it's a great read for young readers who are interested in Doctor Who or Sherlock Holmes.
And you said that's already out?
It's already out in hardcover. It'll be out in paperback in August.
So can we get into some of the controversy surrounding Harper Lee's new novel, Go Set a Watchman? This is coming out in July. Scott Stearns, this is on your list of top picks, and I'm curious if it's because you somehow like bent the space-time continuum and got to read this book early, or you're just anticipating that sales at your shop are going to skyrocket once this comes out.
No bending of the time-space continuum. I don't have a copy. I haven't been able to read it. I just have a lot of buzz in the store. I mean, I had a woman in the other day who was pre-ordering the book, and she just talked about how she was looking forward to it so much. And she read to her son To Kill a Mockingbird, and you know, and when he was growing up, which was about 40 years ago or so. So for me, it's just more the buzz around the book. I think in terms of the controversy, for me, it's I'm going in with sort of, I guess, lower expectations, which is, you know, can it be as great as To Kill a Mockingbird? I'm not sure that any book can sort of live up to that sort of expectation, but it should be an interesting read, and a lot of people are just interested to see what's going on with this new story.
Yeah, and maybe a tough sell if it's got so much hype. I mean, even if it was a great book or is a great book, it would be hard to match the hype. Becky Dayton, what do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking about there's an autobiography called The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee by Marja Mills, which just came out in paperback, incidentally. And I'm going to read that. I just finished To Kill a Mockingbird for the second time just to prepare for Ghost at a Watchman. I don't know what to expect from it, really. I do expect that we'll sell a lot of it. I am excited for the opportunity to just learn more about Harper Lee's life.
That biography, the Mockingbird Next Door, that's what it's called, right? Mm-hmm. This was the one that the journalist befriended Harper Lee and her sister Alice and got to know them very well. And then when that book came out, if I'm remembering correctly, Harper Lee didn't like it. The sister said, this was not right. We didn't want you to publish a book. Is that correct from what you're reading?
That is correct as I understand it. I haven't had a chance to read that book yet. But my understanding was that, yeah, there was some controversy about her writing it at all. But she had access to them. They were very open with her. I'm not sure that it was a fully approved bio, but, you know, she wrote her experience.
Todd Gross, what about you?
Well, I think the interest in To Kill a Mockingbird is so great that anything that came out would be popular. Ghost at a Watchman is the most pre-ordered book that we've ever had at Phoenix Books, and we're taking a big stand on it. My expectations are also kind of low for the quality of it. She wrote
now, why is that? I mean, she at least from what we've been told, she wrote this book first, and her publisher said, oh, I'm really captivated by the flashbacks of Scout. You should write it from her perspective.
Right. So the book that became To Kill a Mockingbird was edited through that process, whereas Ghost at a Watchman, to my understanding, has not really been edited. So it's really whatever the draft was when she showed it to her editor that said, well, write about Scout as a young person. So I don't think that has really been vetted in the way that To Kill a Mockingbird was before it was published. But nevertheless, the interest level is extremely high anyway. And even if it can't, how can it really match? I think people will still be really interested.
And do you guys only get to read it when you get all of the copies in the store, when everybody else gets to read it?
Yeah, it's a strict lay-down date.
Yeah, we had to sign. Did you have to sign an affidavit about it?
Yeah.
Really?
We don't get early copies, and we can't sell them before the release date.
Okay, but tell me the truth, Becky. How many days before you're allowed to start selling it will you actually get those boxes?
We might get them the day before.
That's it?
With a book like that, yeah. They ship really tight so that it doesn't leak.
Wow, and they probably have that kind of ink that you get on, you know,
well,
when you steal
the
bank
notes.
Well, they seal
the boxes with a date, and they say it must not be opened until, you know.
But what usually happens is somebody somewhere will sell it beforehand.
Yeah.
Or put copies, you know, scan it and put it on the web.
On the internet.
Wow. We're talking about books today. We're right now talking about Harper Lee's forthcoming novel, Ghost at a Watchman. A lot of hype about that. If you're excited about it, you want to tell us what you think. Do you think that this book could be as good as Mockingbird? Let us know. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also, of course, always post your recommendations on the Vermont Edition page at VPR.net. Let's go to Nichol, who's calling in from Guilford. Hi, Nichol. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm afraid I can't really help with Harper Lee, but I'll be quick. But I'd like to mention a couple of poetry books and a nonfiction book. First, as far as poetry, Gary Snyder, who's one of my favorite poets, turned 85 on the 8th of this month, and at that time he published a new collection called This Present Moment. It's really great stuff. And a recent related book is called Distant Neighbors. It's the collected letters between Gary Snyder and another of my favorite writers, who's Wendell Berry. It's like listening in while a couple of old friends are sitting around chatting. I really liked this book. But to change gears, I want to mention a nonfiction book that I've been pointing friends at. It's by the linguist John McWhorter. It's called The Language Hoax. The title's a bit heavy-handed, but it really is a very good book. In short, like in the 1930s, 1940s, there was an academic notion that had a lot of popularity and went by names like the Whorf hypothesis and such. I mean, forget the technical names, but almost everybody knows this is the idea that if the language that you happen to speak is somehow a lens that affects how you perceive reality in some deep, fundamental way. I mean, you hear this as things like, if you happen to speak a language that has more or fewer names for colors, and you really do see different colors, and things like this. Unfortunately, the idea was pretty thoroughly discredited quite a while ago, but the idea lives on. It's like one of those urban legends, like the idea that Eskimos have hundreds of names for colors. I mean, it's one of those things that's always being repeated, but just isn't correct. Anyway, to wrap up, for folks interested in these sorts of things, I really recommend it. It's a nice, readable overview of the topic with a lot of discussion of what linguists and neuroscientists have really been able to show about these things.
And, Nichol, it was called The Language Hoax?
The Language Hoax.
great. Wow, thanks. Two great recommendations. What a great description of the Book of Poetry, too, like listening in on a couple of old friends talking. That's really wonderful, Michael. Thanks for the recommendation. Let's go to John, who's with us from Milton. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge science fiction and fantasy fan, and one of the things that I like about it is you can find just about any other genre within the science fiction realm and fantasy realm that you can reading any of the other genres. So I have a couple of recommendations. The first one is I believe it's a 14-book series by David Weber called It's the Honor Harrington Novels. And the reason that I particularly like this series is it deals with epic scale space opera, big space battles, and lots of political infighting, grand scale good and evil, and personal scale good and evil, and ordinary characters, ordinary people, you know, stepping up and doing extraordinary things to, you know, both for the good of their friends and the good of the ship and the good of the civilization, and it's just a great read from beginning to end. It's got a little bit of humans and aliens, a little bit of genetic manipulation, a little bit of just about everything. So it's for those of you who are looking for an epic scale read for the summer, I would highly recommend that series of books by David Weber.
And it's the Honor Harrington series. Yeah, John, thank you so much. That's a great recommendation. Appreciate that. Becky Dayton, I think in past shows when we've had you on, you've admitted that you're not really a big science fiction reader,
no.
Right? So do you hire other people to work at the Vermont Bookshop based on what their levels of expertise are in different genres so you've got the waterfront covered?
I don't know that I would say that I hire, but I am fortunate to have. We certainly do have a couple of staff members who are into science fiction and fantasy, and it does help to have all the bases covered. It's you can't really run a general interest bookstore with an owner at the helm who's only interested in selling literary fiction and memoirs.
Yes, you can't have the little shelf readers if that's all you're going to put up there.
And we wouldn't have very many customers.
What about you, Todd Gross? Do you have a wide and eclectic interest in books?
My specialty actually is science fiction fantasy. And in our store, we have a lot of people that really like reading that. So I rely on other people to read the modern fiction and memoir, where I really focus more on the genre type. Although I've been spreading my wings a little bit lately.
And do you agree with John? Have you read the Honor Harrington series? Do you think they're a good entry?
I think for somebody that would like a more military approach to the future, that might work. It's almost like the Harrington character grows through the series, almost like a Lieutenant Hornblower would. Personally, not my favorite kind of science fiction, but definitely it's very popular and people like that. But it is, like John said, a galactic-wide thing. So
space opera.
Well, it was interesting when the earlier caller was talking about the language hoax. There is a writer called Ian Banks who has developed a series of books set in what's called The Culture, which is a galaxy-wide environment. And he actually created a language for this culture, which does impact the way that they think about the universe. So that is not just an idea that's on Earth now. It gets out into the galaxy, too.
Huh, fascinating. Scott, weigh in here. Where do you find yourself on this discussion?
Well, I read all over the map, but I do rely on my wife to read the more contemporary women's fiction and romance, which I don't normally read. I'll read heavily in nonfiction because we have a nonfiction book club at the store. Like right now I'm in the middle of Michael Lewis's The Flash Boys. Just started Jeff Dyer's Another Great Day at Sea. We just finished Simon Winchester's The Man Who United the State. So I spend my time sort of going throughout the store in terms of what's interesting, but I have to do a certain amount of work on the nonfiction to keep things going. But I rely on some of my other local readers who are great people coming to the store on a regular basis to pick their brains about books, and we put those up on shelf talkers as well. We'll take anybody's advice in terms of books if I haven't read it. So,
let's go to Diane, who's on the line with us from Montreal. Hey, Diane, go ahead.
Hi there. I was just calling to comment again about To Kill a Mockingbird. It happens to be my favorite book. It's my 12-year-old daughter's favorite book and my 15-year-old son's favorite book. So we are highly anticipating the upcoming Watchmen book and have pre-ordered and planned our summer around that. And we also read I Am Scout, which is a biography about Harper Lee, and loved that as well. And then also watched the movie and with Gregory Peck. And so we're big lovers. We moved to Montreal from the South, and this was the best news we'd heard all year.
So, Diane, let me ask you, did you pre-order three copies so you can all read it at once? Are you going to read it out loud, or do you have to share the copy and pass it around?
It's actually a great question. My daughter and I will probably read it out loud and read it chapter by chapter very quickly. My son, being 15, that's no longer cool for him. So we may have to order two copies.
Well, I hope it's as good a read as your family anticipates. It's certainly we're going to be hearing about it as soon as it comes out in July.
I'm sure it will be.
Diane, thanks for the call. We're talking books today. If there are books that you're really excited to read, you haven't had a chance to read them yet because they're not out, but you want to talk about them, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or tell us the books that you have read that you just want to foist on everybody in your circle. You want other readers, you want to be able to talk about them, books that you keep thinking about the characters and you want to just describe the characters like they're people you know, and then you realize, oh, wait, no, my friends haven't read that book. Tell us what those books are. Give us a list for the summer. Again, 1-800-639-2211 or post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Scott Stearns co-owns the Book Nook in Ludlow. Todd Gross is manager of Phoenix Books in Burlington. And Becky Dayton owns the Vermont Bookshop in Middlebury. Together, they are sharing their top picks for summer reads in our semi-annual book show. And we want to hear from you about what's on your bedside table or in your beach tote. What are you thinking will really captivate you on the plane ride this summer to wherever you're going for a fabulous vacation? You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your picks on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Chris recommends the Ellie Stone Mystery Series by James W. Ziskin. Chris says, number three just came out. Start with Sticks and Stone. That's Sticks, S-T-Y-X. And Stone. And next, No Stone Unturned. No Stone Unturned was nominated for the Anthony Award for Best Paperback Original. So again, tell us what you are reading, 1-800-639-2211. And let's go to Caroline, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Caroline, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, I wanted to recommend a book that I just finished last night called Small Mercies by Eddie Joyce. It's an incredible book about the impact of 9/11 on an Italian-Irish family from Staten Island, New York, which is where I'm originally from. And it's a beautifully written book. It takes place over the course of a week from multiple characters' perspectives, going back and forth in time. And the thing that I like the most about it is it really captures what life is like on Staten Island, which people call the forgotten borough of New York. Just a really beautiful book that is haunting me today.
Do you think, Caroline, that this is a book that will stay with you, or are you the kind of person that every book you read, well, as soon as you finish it, you know, that's the favorite book of the moment? I know people who are like that with movies. Or is this a really special one?
This is a really special book for me. I'm a voracious reader, and I started off my career in book publishing, so I've read a ton of books. But this book feels really special to me. It really dives into multiple generations of family in an unflinching way, but yet the story is really told with a heartfelt touch that, you know, it's not sentimental, but it's really very deep and meaningful, and I am thinking about the characters today like I just spent time with them, like they're real people. It's not something I feel often when I read a book.
Well, Caroline, thanks for the recommendations. That was called Small Mercies. By the way, we are going to compile a list of the books that we're talking about today. You're going to have to give us just a little bit of time, but we will get it up on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net when we're done with the show, so that if you're listening and you can't write it down or you want to go back and think about what book was that we mentioned. We'll have it all up there. And if you want to share your top pick with us, you can go there too. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition, and let us know. Todd Gross, another pick for you.
Sure. So going to go back to the science fiction theme, since that's what I really like to read. And the third and concluding volume of Lev Grossman's The Magician series is coming out on the 15th of June. It's called The Magician's Land. And this has been called, the series has been called Harry Potter for Adults, which is sort of a quick marketing thing. But really, it's about our world, except that there actually are magicians in it that are behind the scenes. And it's the story of a young man, kind of a callow young man who you don't really like. And he grows up through the course of the three books, through some big tragedies. And it's actually nice because it is the last and concluding volume. And if you read science fiction, you know that sometimes there are series that just seem to go on and on and on and never end. And this is a really fun read, really interesting. It's going to be a sci-fi miniseries, actually, this summer, too. So it's already made the jump from print to screen.
Well, as many have lately.
And if I don't, you don't mind me saying, Lev Grossman's actually going to be in Burlington at our store on the 23rd of June, which I'm really excited about to meet him, and he's going to get to sign all my copies.
Wow, lucky you.
I know.
So you do still get starstruck sometimes by
authors? I totally do, yes. I will be speechless, but I'm going to really try not to for Lev because I really want to talk to him.
Scott Stearns, do you find yourself getting speechless when you see an author that you really admire?
Sometimes. I mean, I actually had a weird story. I was traveling back from Edinburgh, Scotland, ended up being in the waiting room or the airport waiting lounge with Ian Rankin and the other end of the thing, and I was too nervous to go up and talk to him, even though I knew who he was. But it was just one of those moments of just like, you know, I think that authors like their space. Most of them, I think, are private people. So I guess even though I may be tongue-tied, I find it just a nerve-wracking process when you need to actually go talk to them. So.
Becky?
Do I get tongue-tied when I talk to my favorite authors? No, I don't think I do. I think I see them as people just like me, and I'm very happy to have a casual conversation with them. They don't make me uncomfortable.
Or nervous.
Or nervous.
Super excited. You don't get
no,
that.
No, I'm just not, I don't have that celebrity worship thing going. I'm not sure that it's the best position
yeah,
to
but
take
come
with
on,
all
sometimes.
Authors. I think some like the,
yeah.
you know.
Yes, well, certainly, and you know, as Scott was saying, some really like their privacy. You know,
yeah.
they don't. A lot of them don't feel like this is fun to go on book tours.
People,
yeah,
right. I mean, this considering that they sit and write alone most of the time, they're not outgoing people generally. Authors, they're a lot of them are fairly introverted, and they spend their time in front of a computer.
Let's go to Mish, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Mish. Go ahead.
Hello, what a wonderful program. I immediately thought of a series of books which I began reading when Frank Herbert published the first installments of Dune, D-U-N-E, like a sand dune, in the magazine Analog in 1963 when I was 13. And the fascinating aspect for me is that this has been part of my life since 1963. This guy, he and his son, and collaborators have eventually, so far, I think it's up to 18 novels, each of which is a massive tome. They are absolutely wonderful, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
It is a universe that is fleshed out with history and a sense of the evolution of culture, the evolution of mores, even of language to some degree. It's complex. It's totally engrossing, brilliantly written. It is one of my very favorite series. I have two shelves in my library where these books are placed in a position of honor. And I read the whole series. I would say about every 3 or 4 years, I end up going back and starting all over again.
Wow.
So I very much praise Dune, and I just looked it up on Wikipedia, and I'm very pleased with the factual and well-written reviews of the stories of Dune series. So if anybody wants that, the Wikipedia entry seems very, very well done. Just a thorough delight.
Oh, well, Mish, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. You also got a thumbs up from Todd Gross here in the studio, I guess agreeing with you. Scott Stearns, tell us another pick from you for a top read this summer.
This one just came out in paperback. It's called The Eye Stone. It's actually in translation. The author is Roberto Tirabashi. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it. And it's a fascinating look at early Venice, medieval Venice, and glass making through the eyes of a young cleric who's going blind from copying manuscripts. And so he sort of travels to Venice to try to, you know, with a friend, and he ends up trying to figure out how to solve his eyesight problems, which leads to him to some of the glassmakers, and there's a series of murders going on. And I just thought it was, you know, a fascinating mix of a beach read and travelogue, and sort of the book jacket talks about it being a mix of The Name of the Rose and Dan Brown's novel. So for me, it was just a perfect sort of summer read where you don't, you know, I didn't have much invested, didn't know much about the time period, and just sat down and kind of read it and was intrigued and pulled through it. And there's kind of a nice twist at the end. So.
All right. And it's called The Eye Stone, E-Y-E.
The Eye Stone, yes.
Let's go to Chip, who's calling in from Hanover. Hey, Chip, your thoughts.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I'm calling in because I'm a book publisher and I read a lot of contemporary works just as your booksellers do. But I am just finishing up reading The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain for the first time since it was assigned to me in high school. And I've been reading it with my eighth grade son. And it's one of those books where my son is loving it. But when I read it, I was told, you know, this is the first modern American novel. Every American novel has been written since then. I was a debt to it. You can't appreciate that when you're younger, but now when I'm reading it, I'm blown away by just how great and entertaining the book is. And it also becomes clear that our contemporary humor, the likes of Stephen Colbert, comes straight from Mark Twain. So it's a short read. It's a wonderful read, and I just wanted to share that with others.
Chip, thanks very much for the recommendation. Go back and reread Huckleberry Finn. Do you reread the classics? Becky, you just said you reread To Kill a Mockingbird in anticipation.
I did, kind of as part of a project. At some point in early January, I got it in my head that there were all of these great classics that I had missed for one reason or another. They'd been assigned to me in high school, and I hadn't read them all. And I decided that this year my New Year's resolution was going to be to read one classic book per month, and I missed April, so I've already broken my resolution. As part of that, I read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, which was just wonderful. Just absolutely delightful. To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm not going to remember what the others were. But it is. I wouldn't normally, but I just decided that at 46 years old, I needed to read some books. There were some that were just inexcusable that I couldn't speak about.
And they've held up for you so far?
Well, I had not read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. It had been foisted upon me from about the age of 10 on, and I had resisted it. And it was just a delightful experience. And I'm sorry that I said no, Mom, all those times.
We have a confession. Let's go to Sarah, who's calling in from Montreal. Hi, Sarah. What are you thinking about?
Hi there. Very quickly, because my phone might die on me, but there's two books, actually. One which I have read, which is Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand,
mm-hmm.
and one which I'm looking forward to reading this summer, which is Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. Two sort of very contrasting, but also possibly very complementary books. Atlas Shrugged, of course, being sort of the model for, yes, let's go corporations, yay, and Infinite Jest being very, very anti-corporate. I thought it would be a good critical thinking exercise to see what these two books sort of show about the same topic, which is sort of industry and development in America and the role of corporations from two wildly, wildly different perspectives. So I very, very much enjoyed Atlas Shrugged, and particularly because there's such a sort of a political climate around sort of her philosophical ideas. I definitely wanted to learn more about that. And particularly also with this movie Tomorrowland, I suppose, with George Clooney coming out, which seems like a little bit Atlas Shrugged, like the movie in a way, for anybody who's read the book. It's exciting. It was a great read, and I can't wait to read sort of the opposing view, if you will.
Well, Sarah, send us a note when you're done with this thought experiment and let us know where you come out and what your philosophical position is after reading both of those books. Thanks so much for your comments. Let's go to Hillary in St. Albans. Hi, Hillary.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I have two recommendations. One is a series of science fiction books that I've been reading that I've really enjoyed called The Shadows of the Apt. It's kind of a sword and sorcery type of novel, but really interesting because the human beings in it evolved from insects instead of mammals, and so that's a really cool twist, and you know what that does to their behaviors and things is really interesting. And another book by a Vermont author, I believe, The Starling God by Tanya Sousa.
Don't know that one.
It's a really good eco-friendly book.
Huh. Hillary, thanks for the recommendations. Appreciate hearing from you on those. And listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got recommendations, if you have books you're excited about, maybe you too are rereading the classics or doing some thought experiments. We'd love to hear what you're reading this summer. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Engage with other readers there. Let us all know what you are reading and loving. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about perhaps nonfiction, maybe get into graphic novels and memoirs, see what's happening there, and hear more of your recommendations. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We're getting some top book picks from our experts today. Scott Stearns from the Book Nook in Ludlow, Todd Gross from Phoenix Books Burlington, and Becky Dayton of the Vermont Bookshop in Middlebury. And we're hearing from many of you with your thoughts on great summer reads, things that you're really excited about, or approaches that you're taking to reading. Maybe you have a summer theme that you're working on, or branching out and trying to read things you normally don't. Or maybe you're reading with your family and you and your kids are all reading the same books together. We heard from Diane, I think it was, in Montreal, and there she and her two kids are all going to be reading the new Harper Lee novel when it comes out. Anyway, tell us what you are reading or what you're excited about. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your picks on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Bonnie says, two mystery novels that deal with the repercussions of the Irish Troubles, both very well written and haunting, with great characters, are Adrian McKinty's Falling Glass and Stuart Neville's The Ghosts of Belfast. And Bonnie says, Hermione Lee's biography of British writer Penelope Fitzgerald is a marvelous account of a fascinating woman whose writing career started very late in life. And our own producer, Rick Singeri, says, I am loving The Perfection of the Paperclip, Curious Tales of Invention, Accidental Genius, and Stationery Obsession by James Ward. Rick says, stationery products have never been so much fun. Becky, let's get another pick from you.
It just makes me chuckle because I was shelving books yesterday, kind of in preparation for this. I spent a lot of time in my basement in paying bills, and I thought I just need to go upstairs and handle books. And the ones that I come up with that fascinate me most are completely obscure things. There was a sex book for teenagers that I was completely fascinated with.
Well, maybe that's one of the classics that you can go back and read since you're going back to your teenage years.
I'm going to plant it in my house. The second one that I wanted to talk about, the novel, I'm feeling a little conflicted about recommending just because it's a very hard book, but it's called A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. And you might know about this, Jane, but it's the story of four college friends and their lives after college, four men. Two of whom are gay and two of whom are straight. And the book itself centers around one of them, but you get a lot of sense of all four of them. It's a hard book, and I wouldn't recommend it to just anybody, but people who really appreciate books like The Goldfinch, heavy books with lots and lots of story and lots of thematic material, and who are not squeamish about sex will appreciate A Little Life. I was completely engrossed in it, felt a little strange about having been so engrossed in it when I was done. And now, like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, I still can't stop thinking about it. So I'm convinced that there's something marvelous there. Mm-hmm. And I even have a bunch of bookseller friends who are planning a book group together in Boston in July to just talk about this one book. So,
and is that rare for you?
Very rare. Yeah, I mean, from all over New England.
Oh, I don't know about that book, but it does sound fascinating. It reminds me, actually, I've been thinking in the last week or two that I need to go back and reread Lie Down in Darkness by William Styrone, which is another book that is so difficult to read.
I love Styrone.
Yeah, and I've read that particular book maybe three times, and each time it reminds me just how entrenched we get in our relationships and how hard it can be to pull yourself out once you've created a pattern in your family or in friendships. And you know, each person may see this relationship is not going the way it should, and I'm going to try to fix it, but the other person is just stuck in that rut, and you go down this path that in Lie Down in Darkness is not a pleasant one for this family. But boy, is it a powerful book. And again, one that I've recommended to people, and they say, why did you recommend this? It's a horrible book. It's, you know, it's miserable and depressing and makes me feel terrible, but it's also so well written and just such a keen insight into human nature. So that's probably what I'm going to be reading, unhappily, this summer. If you'd like to share your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Julia in Chittenden. Hi, Julia. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have two suggestions. One is an author. I just finished reading the second book in a row by Archer Mayer, Vermont author of a detective series featuring Joe Gunther. I read St. Albans Fire most recently, and I have to say it really struck me. It's one of the most honest treatments of ordinary daily life in Vermont, the ordinary people, the struggles that they face, you know, portraits of locations like Brattleboro, I guess it's Brattleboro, that he focuses on, plus, you know, an insight into police life. I think he has some kind of background in that. But, you know, if you want an unglossed over, you know, glimpse into Vermont, you know, daily life with the ordinary folks, Archer Mayer's books are great. And the second one I'm in the process of, it's called The Education of Henry Adams. And he writes it in the third person, although it's very autobiographical. He was, I think, the grandson, great-grandson of the Adams family that, you know, they had a president, they had senators and diplomats in their families. What struck me was that he gives a lot of personal responses and reminiscences about key historical periods in American history and what we were going through as a nation from his point of view. And I found it extremely eye-opening to get that perspective, which you don't get in the ordinary dry histories. It's eminently readable. He's got a great sense of humor, very ironic sense of history. So those are my two recommendations.
Julia, thanks for those. Appreciate it. And we're going to go back to Montreal. Jocelyn's on the line with us. Jocelyn, what are you reading and recommending?
Yes, hello. I'm reading a lot lately because I'm home with a pinched nerve.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it.
So I've read about 8 books in the last 3 weeks. I like historical fiction, so there's something called The Spanish Bowl by Andromeda Romano-Lux. Actually, she's the sister-in-law of a friend of mine. She lives in Alaska, but it's the fictional, kind of historical fictional account of Pablo Casals' life. And then The Cello Suites by Eric Sittleben, and he's a Montreal author, and that's a parallel look at Bach's life and Pablo Casals. And I'm a musician, too. I play flute, so I really love anything that has to do with music, theme with music, and this is a real historical fiction, but it's told in a narrative style. So you get into Bach's life, what he was like, the challenges that he faced, and then the next chapter, you're into Pablo Casals' life and how he discovered the Bach Cello Suites, and there's a mystery involved. And every chapter is actually called, like Sarah Bond, every chapter is part of the suites, of the Cello Suites of Bach. Another great historical fiction is All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was a New York Times best, you know, National Book Award, and it takes place in World War II, and you have a blind girl in Paris who has to run to Saint-Malo so she's safe, and then a little German boy, Werner, who, and somehow their lives clash, and it's just an amazing story, and these characters stay with you. finally, I love fantasy, and there's another Ottawa author called Charles DeLint, and my favorite book of all time of his is Someplace to Be Flying. It's urban fantasy, and another one called The Blue Girl is YA. And I've been teaching English for 19 years, and my family owned a bookstore in Chicago, but now I'm living in Montreal, and love your show.
Ah, Jocelyn, thanks, and I hope the nerve recovers quickly. I'm sorry to hear that you're on your back, but if you need a recommendation, it sounds like Jocelyn is who you should be going to because she's doing a lot of reading right now, and thanks for those recommendations. I'll get one more in here. Michelle's calling from Vernon. Hi, Michelle. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a little boy, he's 7, and last year when he was in kindergarten, we read together the entire series by Rick Riordan, Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Two of those books have been made into movies now, and they're about modern-day Greek mythology because this boy, Percy Jackson, is the son of a human mother, and his father is Poseidon, the god of the sea. And so he has a very interesting time. He has a lot of adventures, and he meets monsters, and he meets other demigods, as people like him are called. And they start out, he's about 12, 13 years old, and it brings him right up to when he's 15, 16 years old, and the prophecies that come true and the quest that he goes on. But what really struck me as the most amazing thing about this book is that Percy Jackson, our main character, has ADHD, and he's also dyslexic. And these things actually help him to be a hero, and they help him in defeating monsters and finding out who he is and getting through his adventures. And my son has ADHD, and it was just amazing to be able to see that brought through in such a good quality in a book with a main character.
And Michelle, did your son feel a connection to Percy Jackson through there?
A little bit. I think he's still in the process of figuring out what it all means for him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was presented to him in a very positive way, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, well, thanks for the suggestion. The Percy Jackson books, appreciate that. We're talking about books today, and we've got three booksellers with us who are sharing their recommendations. Scott Stearns at the Book Nook in Ludlow, any other young adult or children's books that you think are really great or that are selling on your shelves?
Wow. Well, actually, I would recommend a couple picture books that I think are pretty good, and they're selling fairly well for us. One is The Day the Crayons Quit by Oliver Jeffries, basically, and it's about the crayons basically going on strike, and so each crayon gets to talk about what's going on and why they're doing what they're doing. So it's kind of a fun read. The other one is called Dragons Love Tacos, and it's basically about dragons loving tacos and sort of funny things going on. So there may be more on the boy side of the books, but I think they're funny, and and we've sold a number of them in the store. So they're great picture books for sort of the young boys who are looking for something over the summer you want to read to them. So,
you know, Scott just mentioned the crayons going on strike, and Becky, I understand that you're actually selling some adult coloring books that are doing pretty well, and I see, Todd, you're nodding too. So what's going on with this trend?
There's an English woman named Joanna Basford who had a couple of adult coloring books, and no, they're not X-rated. They're not adult
not
content.
That kind of adult.
They're just for grown-ups. And people just started walking into the store asking for adult coloring books, and we madly started trying to stock them, and we couldn't get Basford's, but we've gotten everything else we can possibly get our hands on.
I think it's kind of nice that people want to just sit down and color something,
meditative.
Create something. It's a kind of meditative, and, you know, takes them away from their everyday.
Well, Todd, do you think it has anything to do with the upsurge in the last several years now of graphic novels and people really reading and finding meaning and depth in what might previously or in a previous generation have been considered, you know, comics or unsuitable for real reading?
I do think that. I think that our culture is a very visual culture and becoming more visual with the small screen and tablets and phones, and people are getting information a lot more visually than they used to, and you definitely see that growth not just in adult graphic novels, but also for the young kids. That section is skyrocketing for us, and I think it's a great thing. I think that as long as kids are reading, I don't care what they're reading. They could read Archie comics, and like I did when I was a kid.
I'm with you.
So as long as they're reading, they can read the back of a cereal box. I don't really care.
You just want them reading.
Yeah, exactly.
The book I'm reading right now has pictures in it.
All right.
And it's a big, thick novel.
Is that the, is that the sex book for teens?
Well, we're going to leave it there for today, but you can always go see Becky at the Vermont Bookshop in Middlebury, Becky Dayton. She'll steer you into any of the books with pictures. Todd Gross is manager of Phoenix Books Burlington, and Scott Stearns co-owns the Book Nook in Ludlow. He joined us from the studios at PEG TV in Rutland. Thanks very much to all three of you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thanks for having us.
And by the way, listeners, if you didn't catch the name of a book that sounded good to you, check back in a little bit. We will put a list of our sellers' top picks on the Vermont Edition page at VPR.net. And a lot of you who have been calling in, writing in, are posting your picks there as well. So go to VPR.net, click on Vermont Edition. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be speaking with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. We'll get his assessment of the recently completed legislative session, including the budget deal that made to end the session. And we'll also talk with him about his role in the governor's cabinet. You can send questions for him to VermontEdition@VPR.net, and then listen tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.